Thanks for tuning into the Hidden Tracks podcast. You can find us wherever you find podcasts or listen to music. When you have an opportunity, please give us a 5-star review, write a little note, tell us how we're doing. We really appreciate it. It helps us keep this thing going. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us at Facebook at Hidden Tracks. Instagram is at Hidden Tracks 99. And if you'd like to send in submissions or talk to us or give us any feedback about what we're doing, our email is myhiddentracks99@gmail.com. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the show. What's up, everybody? Another week, another edition of the show. This week, I have Trevor from the awesome band Dr. Scientist, who I was lucky enough to already have play here at Hidden Tracks, where we're now recording from. But welcome to the show, Trevor.
Thank you for having me, Shane. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure. And, you know, some big news coming. Basically, it will be tomorrow when your new album finally drops. So big thing is, when an album drops, what do you feel the weight off your shoulders will be, or how long do you think the weight off your shoulders will take to be gone from releasing the new album?
I don't think the weight ever disappears. It's one of those things where you put it out there, it's like a painting, and you're like always worried, like even 10 years down the line, someone's gonna be like, but what if he was red here? Yeah. No, it's, I think once it's out, I'll be definitely like, when we go on tour and stuff, I think like essentially a month after it comes out, I think I'll probably be feeling like I actually like everything's in motion and everything's like out there, you know, doing what I'm supposed to do in terms of putting my 2 feet forward and promoting my art. But I'm definitely relieved that I see the light at the end of the tunnel, because I essentially have been working on this record for like 7 years, which is insane, but also not insane at all, because time moves fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you wake up one morning and it's 4 days later, and you didn't realize what happened to 3 days before. So time does move way too fast, especially the older you get. The days seem to, like, I've said, like, every year you get older, you lose 5 minutes on every day.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but yeah, and I'm like excited to put this out for sure, because this is the most unconventional record I think I've made so far, in terms of every other record I've made has been like, you go in with the band, you go like from ground up, drums, bass, like guitar, vocals, you build over the tracks. But this record, I recorded essentially demos for it, like, when I first moved to Austin like 7 years ago, in various living situations and like like various small rooms like with horrible acoustics. And there's like there's a couple moments where I'm like, that sounds really good. How the hell did I get that sound in like that little apartment I was living in? And like, I programmed all the drums on these tracks, and then I realized like, oh, I like these tracks. I want to like actually like pursue this and like give it life. So like, I went and re-recorded like all the drum tracks, like for real, with my drummer Sean Fairley, who's an animal, by the way. He did 13 songs at 2 hours, like one take each. I was just like, oh my god. I was like, relax, bro. I'm like, we have the studio for the day. It was insane. So in that sense, and then I re-recorded a lot of stuff, like some guitar tracks, I recorded some vocals, I added some stuff. So it's kind of like a weird, like backwards way of doing it. But there's some charm to it, I think, in that sense, because I just was constantly like tweaking and adding little like textures. And I was also like, since they were all quote unquote demos, as all these things start, I suppose, you know, I didn't put so much pressure on it, and I kind of just was, I had fun with this record and added some elements that I definitely normally wouldn't add, like a few like bass drops, and like, it's like a few like electronic little like excerpts like between sections, which is something I totally like never do. But it was kind of freeing and cool. Like, I'm very proud of this record, and I think I was totally being Trevor, if that makes sense, and not worrying about like, this needs to sound like this or that. I was just like, I'm just going to throw some paint at the wall and see what happens. And, you know, 7 years later, a lot of paint, not so much wall anymore. But it's done, and I'm proud of it for sure.
Now, when you start to do something a little different than what you've done previously, is there any hesitation to, you know, you just said you were throwing a lot of paint at the wall, so getting down to the bare bones, like, how
far you may have to scrape to get to the wall again. Is there any apprehension about, well, I've never really done this before, not sure how it's going to be received? Or did you have the mindset of, it doesn't fucking matter either way, I'm just be proud and put it out?
There was definitely some insecurity at some moment, but I think I have a tendency to double down and be like, this is it, like, whatever, I'm doing this, and it's either going to be received well or not, but this is what I believe in this moment, so I'm going to do it. Like the title track, It Hurts, has like a trap beat basically before it goes into the breakdown, which, like, I don't know where that came from, but I was like, this is cool. and then I'm playing it for my friends, and they're like, what the hell was that? And, you know, luckily, people, especially when they see it live, it has a lot of energy. And I think that's where it makes more sense, like when we do it live. But like, there was definitely some like moments where I'm like, is this going to land? Or are people just going to think I'm like trying to be Drake right now or some shit? Like I don't know where that came from, but I'm glad I did it, because, you know, it was kind of freeing and I had more fun with the production on this one, because I was like, and also, like, you know, it lends itself to have a better live show too, because like we bought one of those like electronic drum pads, so now my drummer's doing like some really cool stuff live, like with these little tidbits of backing tracks and whatever. So I think it was a good move in the right direction for me, because I'm definitely a guitar guy, but it's nice to like just explore new textures and new sounds and not worry about like, am I not being true to myself? Like, when I'm making music, I'm always, I think, being true to myself. And that's the one thing I think I have going for me, is if you listen to my music, you're definitely like, oh yeah, I believe this guy is definitely sad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's like, I don't believe him. They're like, oh yeah, tone it down, buddy.
Yeah,
we get it.
Yeah, we're calling in people to be like, hey, someone, we're doing wellness checks as soon as the album comes out.
I can't wait for my parents to hear this.
Well, listen, I can maybe be the first one to tell you that, you know, some things really did work, because It Hurts is one of my top three favorite tracks on the new record. So regardless of trying to figure out how it hits, this one asshole here on the other side of the studio is telling you that it worked. So,
well, I like this asshole's opinion. I definitely value it. So that makes me happy. That's actually probably my favorite track on the record. I think that that particular track was like a moment, like I had just moved back from Austin, and I was like, get my shit together. Like, I like got sober for a few months, so I get my head straight, and I wrote that song, and I was like just in agony, to be honest. Like, after it was said and done, like I finished it, I was like, oh man, this track's kind of badass though. And my boys, they all love playing that live, because I think it just has a lot of really honest like energy and emotion. And so I'm very happy to hear that you dig it, because I think with this, especially like our very first record, our song Postgrad was like, that's always been our most popular song, and I was going to cut that shit from the record. And one of my friends was like, you're an idiot. Like, this is the best song on the record. So I think every song that makes me feel like makes me squirm in my seat, like, oh, they're going to find out that I have emotions. Like, I kind of, with this record, I was like, I'm putting these songs out first, because these ones always seem to land. And people are like, that's my favorite song. And I'm like, oh, the ones where I'm trying to be cool don't, like, you know, hit as much. So,
because yeah, it's not you.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm not a cool guy. I'm just like a very emotional, weird guy who likes to do shots of Rumplemans, which I would advise anyone.
which is a Rumple Goblin great song on the record too.
Yeah, that one I almost didn't put out, but I was like, let's do it. Let's let it rip. And
you kind of have to for the people that know you. So
oh yeah, no. Yeah. People, the people that experience the Rumble Goblin all flock to go on Spotify when they saw that title. They were like, "Whoa, I know what he's talking about." I remember the Rumpelgoblin. That guy was crazy.
Now, when it comes to your personal life, first moment as a child where music kind of connected with you, I always go back to, for me, Beach Boys, 6 years old, life changed forever. Here I am now. Do you have like a moment as a child where there was some kind of music that you connected to like right away and that kind of led you to the path?
You know, that is funny you said the Beach Boys, because I used to, when I was like six, I think I used to listen to Endless Summer. I think it was like a compilation of Beach Boys songs. My mom bought me the cassette and I would listen to it like every night when I went to sleep. So that's funny you said that, because Beach Boys were definitely there. I think I was always really into music as a kid. I'm trying to think of the moment. I think one of the first tapes I ever had was Peaches by the Presidents of the United States of America. I was obsessed with that song, which explains my personality a lot, because those guys are goofy but also awesome. I think I remember like I was a little kid and like we were just like at a concert or something, and it wasn't like a big band or anything. It was like a local show or something, or like it was at my school or something, and someone was playing guitar. And I remember my mom was just like, noticed, I just like couldn't stop like staring at this dude playing guitar. And it was like just entrancing. And then, you know, I quickly just started getting really into music and asking like to buy like do people even know what cassette tapes are?
They do. Some people do. I have had, you know, kids who are 18, 19 years old ask me, like, take them off the wall in the store and ask me what they are.
That is so funny. Yeah. But like, I remember I want to buy a tape, and like my mom would take me to the store, and I remember being in like the record, or not the record shop, I guess it is whatever you call it, the cassette shop, the CD shop, the record shop. I remember being in the store just being like so like amazed, like, whoa, look at all this music. This is so cool. And yeah, I'll never forget that first cassette I had. It was orange, and it was Peaches by the Presidents of the United States of America. And I wore that shit out. And then one horrible day, it melted on the dashboard of my mom's car. I was so bummed. I was like, it doesn't work. What's going on? She's like, I'm sorry, it melted. I'm like, no. I think the second one I bought was Weird Al Yankovic, Bad Hair Day.
Yeah. Which is a huge, great transition from, you know, Presidents right. to Weird Al. I mean, it almost plays along to the style.
Yeah. I remember the first CD I ever bought. I don't know if you've ever even heard this band. It was a band called Citizen King.
Yep.
Mobile Estates. That was the first CD I ever bought. That CD, I still have it. I have driving a 2008 car because I get, you know, fat royalty checks for my music. So yeah. I drive a 2008 and I listen to that CD still. It kind of slaps. Like, it's like the pseudo, like hip hop. Like, it's like, you know, like Beck, in the sense, like, there's a lot of cool samples and cool sounds. And it's like kind of pseudo hip hop, indie rock kind of. But like, yeah, I remember just like being super obsessed with music at a young age and always wanting to sing. And, you know, I really wanted to be a drummer actually originally. And whenever I play the drums, my friends are like, you like are cheesing so hard when you play the drums. You have this stupid like grin on your face. I'm like, yeah, because I'm secretly like a wannabe drummer. But my parents were just like, no, we're not going to get a drum set. Sorry, mom and dad. But I was like, so I moved the trumpet. I was fucking probably terrible at that. So I finally found guitar, and then it's funny, I got a guitar when I was in seventh grade, but I didn't start playing it till I was a freshman in high school. And then I actually ended up becoming a bass player at a jam band for my first band, which,
what was the name of that band?
Auditory Color.
Okay.
So crunchy, bro.
No, listen, we've had some horrible ones. That's not terrible, but that is a fucking jam band name.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It was like an ear with like music coming out of it was our logo. I didn't name the band. And it was funny. I started writing songs on guitar, and my friends were all like, play that song. And I think that my homies in the band were just like, they're like, oh, no, like, this is not what we're trying to do. Trevor's like taking this over. So they kicked me out of the band, and I started my own band. And I'll never forget, both bands were playing some like outdoor show thing in downtown Madison. And I remember watching my buddy try to sing my parts. And he was looking at me like, fuck you. And I was like, you're doing great, buddy.
What was the name of that band that you started once you got kicked out of the other one?
It was called Second Place.
It's a great place to be in.
Yeah, just it works perfectly with my self-deprecating personality. I that was my first band, which was like totally like, you know, like Dr. Scientist, super light, you know, just like very much like all like pop punk rock, singer songwriter stuff with like, you know, rock instrumentals. That was like my first like real band that I fronted. But it is funny that the first band I was ever in was, I was a bass player in a jam band. I was like, I'm going to play bass just to be in this band with my homies in a style of music that I just do not really care for.
Well, it's because you have to learn 10 different songs that everyone's playing a different song at the same time on stage. I mean, that's, you know, to me, it's just, you know, 7 dudes on stage playing a different song all at the same time and calling it music. That's jam band stuff to me.
It we had a saxophone player. I'm pretty sure.
Enough said.
I'm pretty sure like he like, didn't have his mouthpiece like on correctly. It was like always out of tune. It was just like, oh, it was good times. I did produce our debut record on my Tascam 8-track digital recorder. So that was fun. It's just funny also, like, because I do all my own production and stuff and mixing and yada yada yada. So thinking about those days when I had to master stuff in real time, like, you know, be moving all the faders like as it's mastering, and like if I mess it up, I'm like, gotta do it again. I kind of miss those days too. It really taught me like patience and like to like really appreciate, you know, nuances and stuff. It's so much easier now, like, you know, on like any DAW you use to record stuff. But, you know,
it's crazy easy. Yeah. It's, I mean, even you had a digital. I mean, when I was growing up, we had our Tascam 4-track cassette, like, and you were trying to make a great demo on that. And God, the fact that people actually would like call you back after hearing what you recorded on a on a cassette that you sent out is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, I look back at those times and like the way things were done, and then when it got to a digital age, it became easier. And now it's just like you can fart into the microphone and it becomes like a number one hit because of all the shit you can do to it.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I just downloaded this plugin that like gets rid of all the like the nasty noises like and frequencies, and like all you do is just turn up the fader and they all disappear. And I just remember like having to go in an EQ and like just chop and screw like a track because there's all this noise, and it was a nightmare. It's so much easier now. It's insane. But there's such a beauty about like the old days when like someone would walk into an office and like hand someone a tape and be like, listen to this, as opposed to like, you know, the tape sits on the guy's desk, whatever, but like it's visceral, it's real, it's kind of more like a beautiful romantic thing versus like, you know, a demo just sitting in someone's like email inbox and they never listen to it. You know, it's just so much. That's why like I love that like you have a record store like venue. It's just, it's very visceral, it's very real. And I think people really, really like, that's one of the things that won't like go away, is like the real shit, you know, like everything changes, everything gets more modernized and easier and faster and instant gratification, blah, blah, blah. But like live music and like going into a record shop and like holding a vinyl, like that, you can never replace that feeling, I feel like, thankfully.
Yeah. And I do, when it comes to stuff like that, like I love to see like a younger generation being excited to have it. To keep it going, like when a parent will bring a child into the store or something and get them, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's like the original 80s Transformer soundtrack, and this kid who's, you know, 7 years old really wants it, like, and then he's going to listen to it on a record, and 10 years from now, he's going to be like, oh man, I remember that time. And it will keep continuing to grow because it's tangible, right? Like it's there. It's something you have, it's something you can see, as opposed to, you know, seeing is believing, right? Like a big thing in religion is you have to just believe that all this is true. And for some people though, you have to listen, I can't see it, I can't feel it, I can't touch it. So to me, it doesn't exist. So there's a lot of different avenues to take when it comes to holding on to something, but just being able to see a kid want something that's real is so fucking amazing and important to me.
Yeah, no, it's like some of my favorite memories are literally going downtown, like Madison, the Scotty's record shop, and just like, you know, you just flipping through CDs, like, and you're just like, I'm gonna try this out. You take it home, and like all of a sudden you're like, oh my god, this is like my new favorite band, and it's so much more beautiful and real than, you know, an algorithm feeding you shit, which I do appreciate, like. The like playlist made for you on Spotify, like I have found some cool stuff with that, like tailor made to like my taste and stuff, but it's, you know, it's not like when I used to go to the record store and just take a chance on something and be totally enamored with it. And like those days, you didn't know like anything about the CD when it came out. It wasn't like on your computer or any of that crap. It was just lived in the void until someone would buy it. Or someone would be like, hey, that's a good record. And like, I miss those days, you know? Like, now everything is just so jaded. Yeah. It's like, it's not the same. Like, that was, like, I just had so many wonderful memories of just picking out, like, random artists at a record store just by looking at the cover, you know? And the name.
I mean, that was a huge, like, for me, I mean, I think it really shaped my personal music taste, because there was a couple record stores that, like, you know, they'd always get the promo copies of a CD or whatever, and then they'd sell them for like, and what's crazy is this is back in the 90s when CDs were really expensive, but they'd have these promos and they'd sell them for like $2, and I'd be like, all right, well, that's what I can afford. I'd rather walk out with, you know, 5 CDs instead of one. So I would just be like, oh, I like this cover. And then I would find bands that I have no business ever hearing, like, and no one would know who they were. I was like, oh, that's a cool number, cover, and I like that name of that band, His Name Is Alive, I like that. I'm like, and that cover is cool. And then I listen to the music, I'm like, this shit's awesome. And then I'd share it with people and I'd be like, I would never have found this. And most people, I'll say a band name like that and no one's ever heard of them, but they're fucking amazing. And I never would have had that opportunity if it wasn't cheap, didn't have a cool cover and a cool name, and I put the time in to listen to it. Like, that was, I remember those moments all the time. Like, I can go down a list of fucking bands that still, if I mention them, no one will have known who they fucking are or were. And I remember listening to them over and over and over again, and they were so good. And it's like, it's kind of one of the reasons why I started this show, is like to find that music and share it with people and tell them like, hey, this band's fucking amazing. Like, you're probably not going to find it on your own, so you got to listen to this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, and I used to love, like, you know, record stores, the staff would put like staff picks and stuff. And I think like that record Final Straw by Snow Patrol. I remember we had mentioned Snow Patrol at one point, like, and this is before their Chasing Cars like record, but that record they put out, I found that like randomly at a record store. That's one of like my favorite records. Like, and it's funny because I thought the cover was kind of silly, but but I was like, I'm gonna give it a chance, and I was like, whoa, this is amazing. I've had so many moments like that. Like, just, it's just, you feel like you struck gold when you find a new artist, a new record. And like, that's one of those feelings that, like, I think people like search for and appreciate even to this day. And maybe they don't know it because they didn't like grow up with it like we did, but like, I think some kids are starting to get hip to it. And I think just the wonderful thing about music is the real stuff stays, right? Yeah. And the other stuff like goes away, like the fake shit. But like, people will always, like, you know, spend a little more money on like a good live show, or like they'll spend a little more money on like, you know, buying a like vinyl or something of an artist they love. Because that stuff is real, you know, and it means something. And like, I hope that stays like that.
Yeah, and I think music does find you when you need it. Like the real stuff will find you when, you know, same thing in life. When you stop looking for something, you find it. And I think music has a way of doing that, of, you know, regardless of what you share with someone or get an algorithm sent to you. I think the real stuff that sticks with you finds you when you least expect it and need it most.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. I always have my songs that I lean on in times of need. And I'm like, I always am always listening to music and always like, you know, putting on my comfort songs when I'm having a bad day. And it's funny. It's like, like if I'm having a bad day, I'll be like in like my office at the music school listening to like the saddest song ever. It's like, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I just need to get these emotions out so I can move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's like that meme. It's like when you put on the song and it didn't like hurt you emotionally enough, so you replay it. You're like, this needs to make me feel harder. I'm going to play it again.
Well, that's also, like,
oh, I can relate.
Yeah, you get to those moments too where like, okay, I'm really sad. Do I want to be sadder? Or do I need to get happy? Like, what am I going to play? Am I playing Rage Against the Machine or am I playing Elliot Smith? What am I doing right now?
Yeah. No, it's funny. It's like, yeah, you think when you're having a bad day, you're like, oh, I'll put on the Beach Boys or like, you know, Bob Marley or something. And it's like, no. It's like, I want to listen to Death Cab for Cutie right now. Because he feels like I feel.
Yeah, I want to internally hemorrhage right now. Like, that's
Ben Gibbard gets it. He hasn't had a happy day in his life. I love Ben Gibbard. Yeah, it's definitely it's a funny kind of concept, I suppose, because you're just like just relishing in it. Somehow makes you feel better.
Now, talking about songs and how to pick things, so prior to tomorrow's release, as we'll call it, when it came to the music that you created for Dr. Scientist, what song of yours would you play for someone if you had that one opportunity to say, hey, this is Dr. Scientist? Like, pretend you're sitting in front of, you know, Quincy Jones, and he's like, hey, you got 5 minutes, play me one of your songs. What song would you have played for him?
Oh man, I think judging by the response I've gotten, I think maybe Rumpelgoblin.
It's been around 3 months, yeah, I've been going through it. Got people asking, hey man, how you doing? I guess I just shrugged cause I was going through it. A bottle in hand, yes, I was getting through it. Turns out I really wasn't, I was just drinking myself to death. It was never enough, Rumpel ain't no good for reflection. A shell of myself, I never could get my ass out of bed. I told myself I'm good, so much gas and light to my own head. As time rolled on, I had to make decisions. It wasn't easy, but I had to do it. A scar on my heart will remain forever. Live with the pain, sometimes it's for the better. I still lay awake at night, staring at the ceiling. Part of me now. I gotta get back to myself, but fuck.
think it encapsulates a little everything that I do in terms of it's like, it's very earnest and honest and emotional. And then it gets kind of like there's a sense of humor in it for sure. Like the line where I'm like, live, laugh, love, just kidding, lick my sack. Which I didn't think I was going to keep that, but I did. And it was funny. My drummer, Sean, was like, I love that line. It's so clever. I'm like, is it clever? Is it? And he's like, yeah, it's clever. I'm like, okay. which I appreciate. But yeah, I think, and then the end, like, it kind of shows off my, like, my, you know, like, my vocal abilities, but also, like, delivering, like, a, you know, like a powerful, like, emotional message at the end. So I think that song would probably, you know, it'd probably make me squirm in my seat playing it for Quincy Jones, because he'd be like, what the hell? But I think by the end, he might be like, all right, that was kind of like unique and like, you know, powerful, hopefully. But yeah, if I had to choose one, especially off of the new record, I'd probably pick that one, just because I think it like provides a little of everything in terms of, you know, the stuff I like to put in my songs. So I definitely have a sense of sarcasm throughout all my, you know, lyrics, like in a sense of humor, while also being kind of self-deprecating. And yeah, I think I would go with that one. Cause I like the way it kind of builds. It kind of goes to this weird navigation of like sad and then kind of funny. And then like, oh, like, you know, like almost like a bumper sticker at the end, the lyric. I don't think I could have described that any worse, but you know what I mean?
I'm just hoping other people do.
that's what being an artist is.
Yeah.
I hope anyone gives a shit about this.
Now, throughout your life of creation, what, like, song to you stands out the most that you would say through everything that you've put out into the world that have had a chance for people to listen to that, you know, means the most to you? Like, and I understand new songs usually are the ones that stand out, but is there a song maybe from your past or something that is just like, yeah, that one meant a lot to me when I made it?
I think I'm very proud of a song called Violence on the TV, which is on my second record titled Grief. That record, this is like very, you know, like personal, like in terms of like, you know, it was about someone who I, you know, like really care about was going through, like, you know, basically just lost someone. And, you know, I was there for them and like navigating the whole grief process with them. That song, I think lyrically and musically, I'm really proud of it. And it always like hits when I still sing it to this day. But yeah, I definitely remember being super proud of it. Like, you know, just one of those moments where I'm like, the music, the instrumentation, and like the lyrics came together nicely. And if in either that one or the closer on that record, it's titled Grief 2, The Light, I think that's probably one of the most emotional and prettiest songs I've ever written, for sure. I don't think I'd play it live because it's kind of a heavy tune, but I think it's a really beautiful song, and the record kind of ends with like a sense of like almost like acceptance in that regard of the grief thing. So that song, I remember when I finished it, I was like, oh man, this is like a really pretty song. I don't ever want to play this live. It's so sad. But I think that's okay. I mean, I don't think every song needs to be played live, you know? Like, there could be songs that, like, you know, are just a form of expression and a statement, and you put it out there, but it doesn't always have to be, like, a live banger, because, like, unless there was, like, a Dr. Sidus Goes Acoustic record or something like that, you know, I don't see myself playing that one.
No, and listen, there's bands out there, like, gigantic bands that have never played certain songs of theirs in the catalog live. And they never, and they're like, it's not a live song for us and we're not going to do it. So don't ever fucking ask us to do it because it's not going to happen. I kind of like that because I kind of like, you know, it leaves a mystique to something. And listen, when we recorded it, we got exactly what we were looking for and we can never get that back. So we're never going to fucking play it. Like that's just how it works.
Yeah. Like the closer on the new record has like, I had this like a viola player come in and it's like a lot of beautiful strings and stuff. And I don't think we probably won't ever play that live, but I'm happy that it's on the record and I'm happy we did it. But you know, some things just, you know, like you just need to get it out. It's just artistic expression. And like you said, like, you know, don't ask. We're probably not going to do it live. Yeah. I would love to have a viola player in my back pocket just appear at a show, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things that you can't always do everything all the time at once. You gotta make decisions to promote your art in a certain way so that you're being true to yourself, but also hopefully, like, you know, putting your best foot forward and presenting yourself in a way where people become fans, hopefully.
Now, speaking of live performances, I'm going for two here, and I usually like to start with the worst moment, but like when you're performing live, there has to be a moment that occupies this little section of your fucking brain that is always going to be there because it was a live performance somewhere where just shit did not work out for you. Do you remember that moment? And then we'll end the second part of it. Will be like your favorite moment so far of a live performance. But we'll start with the bad first.
Well, so ironically, the moment that you're referring to, I don't remember because I was blacked out drunk. And I was singing Radio by Alkaline Trio, I think. And I was playing the guitar part fine. I only know this because someone filmed it, like an old coworker when I was living in Austin. Because this is the thing, like, you know, like musicians and the party scene, you know, they go hand in hand. Like you want to loosen up before you go on stage and have a few drinks. And then I think we all come to that crossroads where, you know, you take it too far and you realize like, ugh, like that was so embarrassing. So my buddy heard me play Radio by Alkaline Trio and came running out because he was excited. And I think as soon as I opened my mouth, I was like, ah, blah, blah. It was bad. It was really bad. And I remember watching the footage back. And I do remember like feeling like I was losing my edge, you know, on stage in that moment. But like watching that back is so embarrassing. And because I'm like, I pride myself on being a good performer live, like being able to play guitar and sing like well live. So a moment like that, like definitely sucks to confront because you're like, I did this to myself for what, you know, like why did I do this? You know, all I did was just look like an idiot on stage. And now someone who probably saw me for the first time was like, that guy's a mess.
Yeah.
So I would say that's my worst moment for sure. And that's a hard lesson to learn. And, you know, I have not gotten blacked out on stage since, thankfully, because I learned my lesson. It's just, you know, like having a beer or two before I play is like fine, but just getting like freaking ripped and blacked out is just, it's not cool. And if I was like if someone was paying to come see me and they were excited about me performing and they got that, I would, you know, I'd feel terrible. Because I know if I saw an artist that I loved and respected and they showed up just blacked out and drunk and just blew the performance, I'd be super bummed, you know? Like, I think as an artist and a performer, there should be a definitely like, you know, a bar set for ourselves to at least perform to our best ability. I'll just say that, you know?
Yeah, and listen, I've witnessed some, you know, moments where artists are just, yeah. I mean, I've witnessed an artist that I love dearly roll a bar onto the stage so he could continue drinking and forgot the lyrics to all of his fucking songs. And, you know, we left. But yeah, at that moment, I just, all I said to myself was, I was like, I don't know what he's going through. He didn't express that to us. So next time he's around, I'm giving him another chance.
Yeah.
Where some people will just be like, I'm never fucking seeing that guy again. But it's also, you got to look at the humanity of it. And a lot of times, you know, you got artists who are touring and they, you know, could have had a bad phone call. They could have had, you know, just something could have went wrong and they're just self-medicating. So I give them that opportunity to make it up to me at a later date. But at, in that moment, you're just like, well, okay, that's, that sucks that I just wasted, you know, $35 or whatever it is to see that artist.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes down to it is, listen, I've, as many shows as I see, I've seen a lot of shitty ones, but I'll always give someone a second chance to make it up to me. And if it's the same opportunity the second time, then I'm like, yeah, that's just, they're just out. So in hopes that your horribleness of playing radio and being blacked out, people that saw you for the first time can understand that, hey, who the fuck knows what's going on? It's also kind of the reason why, like, I don't start shows very late here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to give people the opportunity. It's like, you know, opener gets 25 minutes, second opener gets 35 minutes, and then the headliner goes on. So you don't, you can't get that fucked up in that short period of time if you're headlining the show.
Oh, no, I'm joking. Yeah. that's an excellent point, because that's also the other thing is, like, sometimes it's also a matter of just, like, you know, you're sitting around waiting to play, and, you know, you have a beer, then you have another beer, then you have another beer, and you just, you have all this time to kill. So that's an excellent point as well, you know. You know, like Idle Hands, Devil's Playground, so on and so forth. You're just like, you know, I think I like the earlier shows for sure, because, like, I do not miss playing, like till closing at bars. Like, ugh. Like, nobody's there. And I'm like, all right, like, nobody's here. I'm just playing some bullshit at this point. And then, you know, now I'm like, I'm just drunk and I'm playing to nobody. This fucking sucks. Whose idea was this?
Well, I have a PSA I want to send out to, like, anyone who's listening to this in fucking elder emo bands and elder bands. If you're going to play on a Sunday, you should 100% have the headliner go on no later than 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
I agree with that. It's been, you know, listen, I just had a great weekend. We had a great show here on Friday, had two great shows to see Saturday and Sunday. But, like, that Sunday when the headliner goes on at 9:30 at night and you've driven, you know, 50 minutes away, like, come on, man. We're all the same age, if not older. Let's make a Sunday show. Like, all right, I'm home by 9:30, you know?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Like, I love doing, we do, like, Sunday shows in my other band, Bag Lady. Like, if we do, like, a Sterling Hotel or something, it's, like, you know, like, 2 to 5 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's wonderful. And then I could just go home and crochet. Yeah. Let me get back to making a hat.
Yeah. I don't have to, you know, the worry, and it's a lot of times for me, like, you know, it's a Sunday night, like, you're, and thankfully the shop is closed on Monday and Tuesday, so, like, that's kind of my weekend. But at the same time, I'm there with my wife and some friends who all have to work Monday morning, and it's like, now I'm worried for them because they're watching the show and knowing that every minute that goes by, it's one less minute they have to sleep and have to worry about getting up the next day. So people out there putting on shows on Sundays, fucking start the fucking lineups at 5 o'clock and have the headliner go on no later than 7.
Let's get together and be sad early so we can go home and have a English muffin before bedtime.
Yeah. English muffin pizza like mom used to make, little mozzarella.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sauce it from a jar.
Yeah, I need an hour to digest this before dinner. Before I go to sleep. No, I feel that for sure. I'm with you on that one.
All right, after that rant, so do you have a, like, memory that stands out for you, live performance that you'll never forget because it was just such an amazing experience?
I think on the same stage in Austin, I think it was, like, Kurt Cobain's, like, it was, like, the anniversary of his death or something. So the three of us wore dresses on stage, and the place was packed, and we were just playing all these punk rock songs and just ripping, and people were, like, coming off the street, like, looking into this bar, like, what the hell is going on? Why are these guys in dresses? And we were just up there ripping. And we did like an encore. I think we did like a whole lot of love like for our encore. It was, yeah, it was a badass. I remember just being like, oh, this is awesome. Like, it's packed. People are having a good time. They're also confused, which is exactly what I want out of a show. I want people to be having a great time, but also like, what, why?
Yeah. Why am I enjoying this so much?
Yeah, that was a cool moment. Also, that was like one of the bigger crowds I ever played to, because it was like an outdoor bar, and it was like just like wall to wall, like people, like it was completely packed. It was a cool moment. And then like, just a funny aside, I remember we had our name on like every TV in the bar, said Dr. Scientist, and I go, I end the show, I go, we're Dr. Scientist, and don't fucking forget it. And I get off stage, and this guy goes, what's the name of your band, man? I was like, I'm gonna go take a shit.
Yeah.
I was like, really, dude? It was funny. What's the name of your band, man? I thought it was so cool. We're Dr. Scientist. Don't you fucking forget it. The guy forgot it.
Yeah, immediately forgot.
Yeah, it was okay. I think, you know, he had like short-term amnesia or something. It was funny. Yeah, it was a cool moment.
Let's get a little sad again.
Do it.
You know what? Let's not get sad right away. Let me hold off that sadness question, and let me go with let's go with a band in your life that never lets you down. You constantly, you listen to them. Someone would ask you your favorite band. I say there's a difference between your favorite band and band that you constantly listen to because they never let you down. So band that never lets you down that you always find yourself listening to.
Ooh, oh man. I was dreading a question like this. That's a great question, because I think about the whole thing, like records and live and et cetera. I think, let's see, Coheed and Cambria has been very consistent. They always put out good records, and they're insane live. But I always tell people my favorite live band to see is My Morning Jacket, actually. They put on a great live show, and their records are always pretty good. But yeah, I don't know. In the vein of like a band that's super influential to me, I guess I would go with Coheed, just because like they always.
You love Dragons and Wizards?
Yeah, dude, I love Dragons and Wizards. You like dragons? Because I'd be dragging my nuts across your face in 5 minutes. Sorry. just a little joke. Yeah, no, and it's funny because I don't know the lore. Like I don't follow the comics and stuff.
Yeah.
I just love his music. I think it's really cool. But I have no idea like the order of the records and how it like equates to the comics and stuff. But this is such a hard question. So I forgive me for giving you multiple answers. But Coheed, or honestly, Death Cab for Cutie also, I love that band so much, and Ben Gibbard never misses in my eyes. All right, no. All right, I'll give you my final answer. Ready? I swear, I'll stop after this. Manchester Orchestra,
the best.
I'll
take that answer. Yeah.
Yeah, they never miss in terms of Andy Hull's like probably my favorite songwriter. They never miss with records live, amazing. And also Andy Hull is just working with like so many people. Like he's on. At one point, it was just like every record. I'm like, is that Andy Hull? I'm like listening to the new Bright Eyes record. Yeah. I'm like, is that Andy Hull in the background? Like, what the hell? Bright Eyes? What? He like worked with like that band, Oh Brother, which I dug. Bristin Maroney, I dig him. He co-produced some stuff with Bristin Maroney. The list goes on.
He really has. I always like I'd love to give him credit because he's done so much for so many people that he finds someone that he thinks is talented and he will invest his time and energy into making sure people know who the fuck they are.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So that's my final answer. Manchester Orchestra. They're a big influence on me. And yeah, like straight up, I remember when I saw them live and they were playing, I think they were playing The Gold. I just was like crying. My friends were like, are you all right? They were patting my back, and I was like, stop, you're making it worse.
Yeah,
they're just
so beautiful performances live, and I can say that there's two bands that I've seen many, many times that have, which is crazy to think because I've seen a lot of bands a lot of times, but like it's Manchester Orchestra and Biffy Clyro. I've seen at least upwards of 10 times each. And
Biffy's great live.
Yeah. And they have never missed live. And it's fucking crazy to think that like out of all the times I've seen them, I've never, The Darkness is another one who I've seen so many times that I'm like,
dude, they rip.
Never missed. Like, how do they not fucking miss on all these shows that I've seen them? And I'm like, well, that's just because they're, better than me and they're professional, you know?
The Darkness, those guys are fucking like guitar slingers too, man. Like they rip. And that guy's Justin Hawkins vocals. Do you ever fuck with the Foxy Shazam?
Oh yeah. So I'm a huge Foxy fucking fan.
Hell yeah.
And I remember, this is a great story. So Foxy was opening for The Darkness at Irving Plaza this years and years ago.
That sounds like a fucking awesome bill.
Oh, it was a fucking
I fucking wish.
And
I can see that.
We're there. There's like 10 of us. We're upstairs. And one of our friends had never heard of Foxy Shazam, never seen him, never knew nothing about him. And when Foxy was done, he's like, I feel really nervous right now. I'm like, why? He's like, I just feel scared. Like that was scary to watch. I was like, I thought it was fantastic. I go, but I love the fact that you got scared from how Foxy put on her show. I'm like, that's fucking great. It's like the guy was standing on his fucking piano, like playing with his feet. Like what the fuck?
Did he eat the cigarettes at this show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Five lit cigarettes. Yeah. Fucking animal, dude. what's his name again? I'm blanking. He's the best, the singer. I hung out with him in Austin after a show. He's a really, really nice guy. I forget his name. Anyway, continue your story.
No, and then that was the same night that watching The Darkness, Justin and his brother, they got tangled up like in their guitar cables around their feet. Like I saw it happen. Like they didn't like let you know it happened, but I saw it happen and I was like, ooh, this is weird. I was like, and I pointed at my buddy. I'm like, dude, do you see the, like, that? He's like, oh yeah. I'm like, they're tangled up. They continued to rip through the song and completely untangle themselves without anyone ever noticing except for me, who notices everything. But I knew no one else in the fucking audience knew what was going on. Like they were like, oh fuck, we are really tangled. It's going to rip everything out. And they just completely untangled themselves while ripping through the songs together. I was like, that to me was one of the coolest things I had ever seen on stage.
That is awesome. Also, yeah, their guitar parts are so badass. Like those guys definitely rip super hard. I'm definitely a huge fan. And it's funny. Oh, I remember his name, Eric Nally, the singer of Foxy.
Yeah.
I saw them open for Senses Fail. And I was like, that was the first time I think I saw them live. And I was like, this band is awesome. But all those emo kids were like, this is stupid. What's going on? Like, why are they playing the theme, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? And I'm like, this is fucking awesome. Are you kidding? So he goes, who here doesn't like us? And people were like, boo. And he goes, well, meet me out back, and I'll slam your face into the concrete till you bleed to death. And I was like, whoa, it's fucking awesome. And Eric Nally comes walking through the crowd, and he was like, had a hoodie on. Like, and I like grabbed him, and he like looked at me like, like he thought maybe I was like going to be like, like, I'm gonna fuck you up, dude. I was like, yo, that was fucking awesome. And he was like, thanks, man. He's like, thank you so much. He's such like a sweet guy. That's why it was so funny. Like hearing him say that shit was outrageous.
Yeah, and if anyone listening to this has never, I'm sure I've mentioned Foxy plenty of times on the show, but if you have never heard them, you definitely have heard Eric Nally because he was on fucking Macklemore's gigantic hit.
Downtown.
Yeah. So you definitely heard his voice. And you know what, one of the things too is like, if I see people that like are looking for Queen records and stuff and I have fucking Foxy stuff here, I'm like, it's a crazy analogy, but it really is. I'm like, they're the like, especially Eric's voice, like this is the closest thing to Queen that you're gonna get from new age music. Like this
also,
is
what it. what a live performance. Those guys are so good live. It's a show. It's a fucking,
it's a performance
spectacle. Yeah. It's an art
performance with great music being performed. Yeah. Like it's crazy.
So awesome. Like they went also like the self-titled record is dope. The one before, I think it was just called Introducing, like, was like, had tinges of like hardcore in it and stuff. It was just a very cool band.
Yeah.
Like, and also they're, I like the show Peacemaker.
Yeah.
they're on the, like, their song Oh Lord is like the title track on the credits in the beginning, which I was stoked to see. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I'm like, yeah, like, we can't forget about Foxy Shazam. Yeah.
So the first time I heard Foxy was they were in an NHL, EA Sports NHL video game. That's what and like, you got to like pick your playlist, and I was like, I found that song, and that was the first, that's how I first heard of them. That was years and years and
what
years ago.
What song was that?
I forget what song it was.
Unstoppable, maybe?
It might have been. Yeah, I think it was, because like, you win the Stanley Cup and they play that song or something. But it was, I remember that. I was like, who the fuck is this band? I was like, this is amazing. And then I just started diving and then was like, oh my God, I'm all in on
it. Yeah, my favorite song on that record is The Only Way to My Heart is with an Axe. That song is awesome. The title itself, it just speaks volumes. The Only Way to My Heart is with an Axe. I love that.
All right. From great music to, do you have a guilty pleasure? Some kind of music that you listen to that people be really surprised that you fuck with a lot?
I really love old country music. Like, Hank Williams Sr. is like my favorite country artist. But I suppose that's not really a guilty pleasure. Let's see. I love Harry Styles. Maybe that's a guilty pleasure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. that record, Harry's House. Oh, that record is fire. I do love that record. That'd probably be surprising to most people.
Great. That's the answer. That would surprise people.
For sure. I fuck with it.
All right. Now we'll get sad. Let's world's coming to an end, meteors hurling into the earth. You have 5 minutes left to live. What song are you listening to?
Cancel on Me by Bombay Bicycle Club.
Wow, that was a fucking, you had that fucking locked and loaded. Jesus Christ, my man.
I want to feel things before I die. I love that song so much. Also, that their debut record is like one of my favorite records of all time. I had the blues, but I shook them loose. Fantastic record. I think James Ford produced it, who did like a lot of he did the first Arctic Monkeys record. I think he did a few of their records, but just a really awesome, like, I don't know, like a really one of the best indie rock records I've ever heard in my life. And they were like 20 when they made it, which makes me so mad. Just like, I'm 36, like, yeah, fucking these kids are so much better than me. But yeah, Cancel on Me, Bombay Bicycle Club.
All right, nice. All right. Unfortunately, your home is burning to the ground. Every living creature, thing, person, being is out safely. And you have a minute to run back in and grab one musical thing that means the most to you. What's that one thing you're grabbing?
Oh, I guess my guitar, my Telecaster, which is custom made and got stolen in Austin, and I got it back. And its name is also Madeline, after my grandmother. That's definitely my favorite piece of musical equipment, because I had it all custom made, and it's very much like a expression, an extension of myself.
Yeah, it's a piece of you.
Yeah. And it got stolen once, and I found it 17 hours, like Liam Neeson from Taken. We'd have to do another podcast to tell this story, but I was essentially wearing skinny jeans, women's sunglasses, and a shirt that said, let's make a panda, that had a black bear and a polar bear holding hands. And I was interrogating homeless people on the streets of Austin, Texas.
That must have taken you a long time, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, 17 hours total, but yeah. I got it back. But that guitar is... like, that was my when I graduated college, my parents were like, you want to go to Europe? And I'm like, no, I want to build a guitar, and it's mine, and it's, you know, the only one like it. So that's what I would definitely grab.
All right, awesome. Well, we're going to come in on our time here before we get to our final segment of the show, which is our weekly threes. So before we get there, love to give you this opportunity to tell everyone how it is they can keep up with what you're doing, how to find the new album, how to support you in any way, shape, or form. You have the floor now to tell people how to do that.
Yeah. So just check us out on Instagram at Dr. Scientist Lives. We're also on Facebook if anyone even uses that anymore. Instagram is probably the best way to check us out. We have some tour dates coming up. We're hitting North Carolina, Nashville, New Orleans, Texas, Cincinnati. And we have some local shows in Jersey as well. we got a few music videos coming out. But yeah, check out the new record, It Hurts, which drops tomorrow. That'll be streaming on everything. We are going to do a vinyl print as well. So come to a show and grab yourself a vinyl and touch it, feel it, and enjoy it. And it'll definitely be in Hidden Track Records for sure as well. Thank you for this opportunity, Shane. I had a great time talking with you.
Well, as did I. So we are in our weekly threes. It is three things you're listening to that you would like people to check out. You give your three, then I give my three for the week.
Okay. Oh, man. Okay. Three things I'm listening to. And these are going to be random as hell. I absolutely love Hayley Williams' new solo record, Ego Death at Their Bachelorette Party. I feel like Paramore, you'll probably dig it. It's a little more pop, but very interesting, very cool. Lyrics are great. Instrumentation is great. A band that I absolutely adore, Weatherbox, just put out a new song. If you haven't heard of Weatherbox, listen to them. They are so awesome. They used to tour around with like Say Anything, and they're kind of in that vein, but lyrics are always fantastic. Guitar playing is cool, interesting. The third thing I will say, if you've never listened to Foxing, I've been listening to them a lot lately. Great band. They just opened for Coheed. They're fantastic live. I've been a big fan for a long time. But yeah, if you have never listened to Foxing, one of the coolest bands, just mixture of like their songs are like go from like really pretty to like screamo hardcore to proggy to everything in between. And so that's my three.
Awesome. Good three. All right, my three for this week. My first one is a band called Career Woman with an album called Lighthouse. It is very indie rockish. It has kind of a legacy. It's Melody Caudill, Jeff Caudill of Game Face, Low Coast, your favorite Trainwreck's Daughters band. It is, I highly, highly recommend everyone to check that out.
Cool, I just added it.
Number two is Chloe Hawes, Hawes, Reminders is the name of the album. Very, I want to say it kind of like, I would say it's a singer-songwriter that adds this punk sensibility to the songs that is like very natural. And, you know, sometimes people try to create something and you can see they're trying to create something and they miss the mark. But Chloe definitely nailed it on this. And last but not least is an artist goes by the name Saint Terrible, album called Sleepless, very drony, quiet, hard at times, like just great sounding vocals, great melody, singer-songwriter style of stuff that just mixes a lot of different things into it. So those are my three for this week.
Cool. I like the name Saint Terrible. I just looked at his Spotify and he's wearing a bunny outfit. I dig that because my picture on the other side is me wearing a shark costume. I dig the I understand the aesthetic.
Yeah, you dig the randomness. Yeah,
yeah, I love it.
But Trevor, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the music you've created. that have given people out there an opportunity to feel like they know you better. And this episode of the show will get them to really know you. So thanks for taking the time out for doing this. Thank you for the music. Thank you for performing at the shop. And, you know, we support you and we'll do everything we can to get this music out to the masses. But, you know, congratulations on the creation. Best of luck tomorrow with the release. And, you know, we are going to do everything we can. Think you're fantastic. You're a good human being. You're a good person to hang out with, and you're even a better artist. So, you know, thank you for everything.
Oh man, I'm blushing. I appreciate you so much, Shane. Love what you're doing as well with your shop and everything. And love that you had a venue, you're promoting local music. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to being homies for as long as possible.
Well, everybody out there in the world, you know what time it is now. It's time to go out, listen to Dr. Scientist, and have a great fucking time.
Thanks again for tuning into the Hidden Tracks podcast. We hope you enjoyed this week's show. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at HiddenTracks99. Also, send all your submissions to myhiddentracks99@gmail.com. Tune in next week. You may find your new favorite band. And don't forget to go out and have a great fucking time.